welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. In this hour, sitcoms of the past. Later on, we hear Harold Perry as the Great Gildersleeve. But right now, it's Meet Millie with Audrey Totter, a broadcast from March 23rd, 1952 on CBS.
And now transcribe Meet Millie, created by Frank Galen and starring Audrey Totter. Yes, it's time to say hello to Mama, played by Bea Benaderet, and Alfred, played by Marvin Kaplan, as once again we meet Millie. Well, Millie Bronson and her Mama feel about relatives the same way most people do. That is, they enjoy their company for short visits every now and then, but don't like to see now get too close to then. Take Mama's Aunt Ethel, for instance. She's fine in small doses, but a little hard to take for a long period of time due to her eccentricity about her health and her constant harping on the subject. Anyway, it seems that Aunt Ethel is coming over for dinner. And as we join Millie and Mama, we find them shopping for the occasion at the local market.
Okay, I got the mayonnaise and the canned peas. What else?
I'll look at my list. You check the basket. Butter?
Check.
Corn flakes, paper towels, jar of mayonnaise?
Check.
Can of star-kissed tuna, pound of coffee.
Check. Hey, wait a minute.
What?
This isn't the kind of coffee you usually buy.
I did that again? That's what I get for taking it from the shelf with my eyes closed. Go change it, honey. I'll watch the basket.
Mama,
mm-hmm.
Why do you take coffee from the shelf with your eyes closed?
Who can stand to look at those prices?
I know what you mean. A dollar bill doesn't go very far in the market these days.
You said it. I can remember when my mother used to feed the family for $7 a week.
Really? $7?
Absolutely. In those days, people used to get coffee nerves from drinking it, not from paying for it. Let's see. I think we have everything here. Let's go over to vegetables. We'll shop for Aunt Ethel.
Okay. You know, it's kind of convenient having a relative who doesn't eat anything but vegetables.
Well, it's certainly a saving to feed such a person. It's like I was telling you, if she came to live with us, it wouldn't cost more than it does now.
That's enough, Mama. I told you last night I realized Aunt Ethel wants to come and live with us, and I realize she's old and alone. But I will not hear of it, and I don't want to wish to discuss the subject any further.
Who's discussing? I just mentioned in passing, that's all.
Okay.
I agree with you. I don't want Aunt Ethel living with us either. I'm on your side.
You sure?
Sure. Who wants to give a sick, lonely, friendless old woman a little pleasure in her last year?
Mama, please.
Let her die like a dog. Who wants to? Let her waste away in the dark corner.
Mama.
It's pretty good, huh?
Mama, I don't want you to think I'm being selfish about Aunt Ethel.
I understand perfectly.
It's just that Aunt Ethel's such a hypochondriac.
Millie, now let's be fair. She never stole anything in her life.
That isn't what it means.
Oh.
It means she has a million imaginary sicknesses. And her diet of vegetables and fruit juice is enough to drive you crazy.
Yeah. But you'll have to admit she's a very sweet old lady.
Now, listen. I know you'd love to have your Aunt Ethel live with us, but you know there's no room. Remember how terrible it was a couple of weeks ago when we took in that boarder, Mr. Harris?
Yeah, I know, honey. You're right.
He was as sweet and mild a little man as you could find, and it just got so uncomfortable we had to ask him to leave.
I know. But Aunt Ethel isn't like Mr. Harris. She is an...
Did somebody call me?
Mr. Harris.
We were just talking about you. Isn't it a small world?
How are you, ladies?
Fine. How's your health, Mr. Harris?
Oh, splendid, thanks. Splendid.
Are you living in the neighborhood, Mr. Harris?
Oh, yes. I found a lovely room with a very nice family just around the corner.
That's nice.
Yes, I like it very much. I have kitchen privileges and private entrance, and I can use the sewing machine whenever I like.
Do you sew, Mr. Harris?
do I sew? Glorioski. My sister used to say that I never really came to life unless I was sitting by my sewing machine.
That's very interesting. What do you sew?
Well, I make my own shirts and my own shorts. Oh, what I almost said, Nick's company.
Look, Millie, he's blushing.
Oh. Oh, go on now, Mrs. Bronson. You're terrible.
Be careful, Mr. Harris. That's the tomatoes you're trying to bury your head in.
Millie, I wish you'd tell your mother to stop being such a tease.
I'm sorry. It sure is nice to see you again, Mr. Harris.
Thank you. Same here. I've missed you both.
Tell me something, Mr. Harris. How does it happen that an eligible bachelor like yourself who's so handy around the house isn't married?
Oh, I don't know. I've had plenty of proposals. Just recently, I broke my engagement to a charming girl, but we had a disagreement.
Really?
What happened?
She didn't want me to work after we got married.
You should have grabbed her.
Sure. Yeah, you're the type women like to mother and take care of. You might as well take advantage of it.
Oh, but that's not it, don't you see? I'm tired of being mothered. I'm waiting for a girl who wanted to lean on me because she's the weaker of the two.
Well, someday you'll dig up the right girl.
Oh, I sure hope so. I'm getting tired.
Excuse me for interrupting, Mr. Harris. Mama, isn't that Alfred Prince medal over there?
Where?
Over there measuring those two string beans.
Yeah.
Why, he's a strange-looking boy, isn't he?
He's a poet and an artist. A very talented young man, isn't he, Mom?
Oh, yeah. Alfred has so much talent, he's unbearable.
Oh, he's coming over.
Hello, Alfred.
Hello, Alfred.
Hello, Mrs. Bronson, Millie.
Yeah. This is our friend, Mr. Harris. Mr. Harris, Alfred.
How do you do, young man? I've heard a lot about you.
You hate me.
Alfred.
Alfred is terribly sensitive, Mr. Harris.
I assume that everybody hates me until they prove otherwise.
Mr. Harris is a very nice man, Alfred.
You really want to prove you don't hate me?
Oh, yes. Just tell me how.
Give me $20.
You're right. I hate you.
Now at least we're out in the open.
Judging from the way you're acting, Alfred, you're working on a painting or a poem, and it's not doing too well. Am I right?
My muse has deserted me. I can't finish my poem.
You're stuck with the poem, Alfred?
Yes, I am.
Recite it for us as far as it goes. Maybe you'll get a sudden inspiration.
Well, okay. My heart is alone, by Alfred. My heart is alone since you have left. Of your sweet presence I am bereft. I feel locked out like a man who's lost his house key.
Go on.
Then I got stuck.
That's a shame. It's good as far as it goes.
Oh, it certainly is. Glorioski.
What did you say?
Glorioski, no offense.
That's it, that's it. You finished my poem.
I beg your pardon?
What, Alfred?
Listen, My Heart is Alone by Alfred. My heart is alone since you have left. Of your sweet presence I am bereft. I feel locked out, like a man who's lost his house key. If you don't come back, dear, Glorioski. The end.
Oh, bravo.
That's wonderful.
You see, Mr. Harris inspires you.
That's right. Come on up to my place, Mr. Harris. I'll show you my still life painting of a free lunch counter.
Oh, splendid. See you later, folks.
Millie. Look at them going off arm in arm. Isn't that a pretty picture?
Yeah, a still life. Would you please pass the pot roast, Mama?
Yeah, here you are, dear.
Thanks.
Have some more salad, Aunt Ethel.
Yes, Aunt Ethel. You've hardly touched any dinner.
Well, how do you expect me to enjoy my vegetables with that heavy smell of pot roast filling the room? I don't know how you can eat it.
But I love meat. Pass the pot roast, Millie.
Here you are. Do you realize that you're eating a steer that was butchered mercilessly in the prime of its life?
Millie, you want to finish my pot roast? No, thanks. All of a sudden, I've had enough, too. Let's have some dessert, huh? Pass the pudding.
Yeah, here you are.
Thanks.
Gee, it looks delicious. Hmm? Do you people realize that in that pudding is white sugar, which turns to acid on your teeth and eats them away?
I'll skip the dessert. Me too. Let's just have coffee. Okay, you pour. Fine, hold your cup.
Do you people realize...
Okay, no coffee, no coffee.
Very well. Now, if you'll excuse me for a moment, I want to get my vitamins. I left them in my bag in the bedroom. I'll be right back.
It's a good thing we only see her once in a while. She means well, poor soul. Maybe. But it'll be weeks before I'll be able to eat bacon without wondering if the pig left the family.
It's pretty annoying with that talk, but she'll be gone tomorrow.
Yeah, she better be. Don't you dare let her talk you into inviting her to stay here, Mama.
Don't you worry. Your mama's no but...
That must be Johnny. Come in.
Look, Millie, you better get him out of here fast before Aunt Ethel comes out.
Yeah.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Johnny.
I got my coat right here, Johnny. Let's go.
Will you stop pulling me? I hate to be rushed.
He's right, Millie. Don't pull it. Come over here on my side and we'll both push.
Hey, the way you two are trying to get me out of this apartment, I'm beginning to suspect you have a corpse on your hands.
Oh, hello, young man.
Say, I was right.
Trapped like a rat. Aunt Ethel, this is my friend, Mr. Boone. Mr. Boone, my Aunt Ethel.
Hello, Aunt Ethel. How are you?
My liver is better, but my kidneys have taken a turn for the worse.
I beg your pardon?
It serves him right for not being pushed out when he had the chance. Mr. Boone and I are in a hurry, Aunt Ethel.
Yeah, nice to have met you, Aunt Ethel. Goodbye.
Oh, not so fast. Millie, do you know what it does to your stomach when you rush away from the table like that right after eating?
Tell me later. Come on, Johnny.
The food misses the digestive juices and wanders around the intestines for hours trying to find its way into the bloodstream.
At the first gas station we come to, I'll see that she swallows a road map.
See, that young man has spunk. Millie should marry him so she can knock it out of him.
Good night, Aunt Ethel.
Good night. I'm baffled to have met you. We'll be late for the movies, Millie.
By the way, movies are very bad for your eyes. And
good night, Millie. Good night, Johnny.
If you go to a restaurant, demand to see a medical report from the chef's doctor.
Millie, take Johnny out quick. His eyes are getting glassy.
And if you must kiss goodnight, be sure to do it through sterilized gauze bandages.
Now, Aunt Ethel. Goodbye, everybody. J.R. Boone and son, good morning. No, sir, he isn't. Is there any message? Thank you. I'll tell him you called Mr. Harrison. Yes, can I help? Oh, Mama!
Yeah, hello, Millie. I thought I'd drop in to see you. You got home so late last night, I couldn't wait up for you.
I wanted to be sure Vanessa would be gone when I got home. I didn't want to have to see her.
Yeah, I figured that.
I'm sure glad she's gone. She's a real crackpot, isn't she, Mama?
I'll say. That's what I wanted to talk to you about, Millie.
What do you mean?
Well, after you left with Johnny last night, Ethel and I started talking while I did the dishes.
She didn't help?
Nah. It seems that soapy water seeps in through the pores of the hands and mixes with the digestive juices.
Oh.
Yeah. So anyway, naturally, she started working on me. It's so lonesome in her house out on Long Island, and could she stay with us? Can you imagine the nerve?
Oh, brother. I hope you told her right out how we feel about it.
I didn't mince any words. Don't worry. She wanted to move in for a year.
A year? Is she kidding? You know what a year of living with her would do to us?
It'd drive us out of our minds.
We'd go crazy.
That's right. I don't even know how we're going to stand the 6 months.
What did you say?
Millie, she's so old and she's lonesome and I felt sorry for her. And besides, she begged me so and she... Millie, where are you going?
I'm going to find out if they take girls in the Foreign Legion. I'll drop your card from Algiers.
We find her talking to her boss, J.R. Boone Sr.
I'm sure the problem isn't quite as bad as you're painting it, Miss Bronson. Hand me that report. Thank you.
But I tell you, you don't know my Aunt Ethel. She'd make anybody lose his temper.
Nonsense. There's never any excuse for losing the temper. You must learn to remain calm and cool and not let people annoy you. This isn't the report I want. Where's the advertising report?
I didn't get to it yet.
I didn't get to it yet. Where do you think you're running here, a college sorority? When I tell you to do a report in the future, you get it done, and don't you forget that.
Yes, sir.
Now, where was I? Oh, yes, yes. You must learn not to lose your temper. Because it never gets you anything, and it makes others unhappy. You understand?
Thank you, Dr. Jekyll. I'll tell Mr. Hyde when he comes in.
I beg your pardon. Miss Bronson, are you?
Oh, there you are, Millie, dear.
Aunt Ethel, this is Mr. Boone.
So this is the famous Aunt Ethel I've heard so much about. How are you, my dear?
Oh, look at his color. Oh, I'd say you smoke too many cigars, old-timer.
Old-timer?
Sit down, Mr. Boone. Aunt Ethel, we're very busy now.
Oh, nonsense. A man of his age must learn to take it easy.
My age? My dear little old lady, you are old enough to be my mother. And I'm glad you're not, or I'd never forgive my father.
Now, temper, temper. You mustn't get that blood pressure up too high, old-timer.
Old-timer!
Aunt Ethel, would you mind leaving?
Oh, believe me, Mr. Boone, you needn't be so sensitive about your age. Why, look at Toscanini. He's 80 years old and still able to conduct the symphony orchestra.
Yes, and I'm sure when you were his age, you could do it, too.
Now, let's be careful.
I hate to insist, Aunt Ethel, but Mr. Boone and I have some work to do. Would you please leave us alone?
Oh, now, I'm not sure it's safe to leave a young girl like you alone with Mr. Boone.
Oh, go on.
You don't have to worry, Aunt Ethel.
Oh, but I do. I don't think I should leave the two of you alone.
Maybe she's right, Miss Bronson.
Well, of course I'm right. A man your age is liable to collapse any moment and leave this poor child with a dying man on his head.
Miss Bronson.
I understand, Mr. Boone. Come on, Aunt Ethel, let's go to lunch.
Well, that's a good idea. I found a restaurant where they serve raw grass that they grow themselves.
Goodbye, old-timer.
Go, old-timer!
He's going for the letter opener, Aunt Ethel. Let's run. And now I'm afraid to show up at the office in the morning.
I can understand it. Poor Mr. Boone.
Where's Aunt Ethel now?
She's down in the basement inspecting the furnace. She wants to be sure they send up clean steam.
Mama, I don't want to say I told you so, but look what you've done.
Yeah, I know, honey. I'm sick about it. We've got to get rid of her.
I know, but how? Meanwhile, Johnny won't come near the house, and she might have cost me my job.
And my hands are getting sore from making her a quart of carrot juice every morning.
I don't understand her, Mama. What makes a woman get like that?
Well, honey, Ethel didn't have a very happy life. You know what I mean? As far as romance.
She was married once, though, wasn't she?
Yeah, and her husband died under tragic circumstances.
Really?
Yeah. He fell in a sewer.
And drowned?
No, he didn't drown. He climbed right out.
So what killed him?
Aunt Ethel tried to sterilize his head with boiling water.
Oh, what a shame.
Yeah. She never saw another man again, and I know she's terribly lonely.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, you know, men are like teeth. They give you an awful pain, but it's hard to enjoy life without them.
I guess you're right. Having a fellow might change Aunt Ethel into another woman.
I know it would. You think she'd say all those nasty things about meat if she had a boyfriend made out of it?
Oh,
Well, the way you put things.
That's true, anyway. I'd love to find you a fella. Only where do you find such fellas?
Yeah, to get along with Aunt Ethel, a man would have to be a combination angel and mama.
Huh?
Have I got an idea?
What? Don't keep it to yourself.
Mr. Harris for Aunt Ethel.
That's a great idea. They have so much in common, and he's lonely, and she's lonely, and she nibbles grass, and he's a rabbit. A fella for Aunt Ethel.
Yeah. Mama, do you think it's safe?
What do you mean?
I wonder what the effect on her will be when that carrot juice in her veins heats up.
Cold, though.
No, not too cold.
No.
No.
Just nippy, you might say.
Yes, that's it. Nippy.
Or you might even say snappy.
Yes, you might call it snappy.
Are these our children?
Mama, why don't you and I go into the kitchen and play canasta?
That's a very good idea. You'll excuse us, I'm sure.
Well, if you must.
Well, I hope we're not driving you out.
Oh, no. And by the way, you can turn out the big light and turn on that table lamp. If it gets over being nippy, that is.
A lovely woman.
They don't come any finer than Bertha.
Oh, sir, she's one in a million.
When they made Bertha, they threw away the mold.
Absolutely.
There's no getting away from it.
It's true, all right.
It certainly is.
You bet.
Yes, sir.
Wonder if it'll be nippy tomorrow.
I don't think we'll have much more cold weather.
You don't?
No, I don't.
Well, that's a provocative statement. What makes you say that?
Well, my leg operation generally gives me a twinge when we're at the beginning of a long cold spell.
Hmm. Did you have an operation on your leg, too?
Yes. Did you?
Oh, I certainly did. They thought it might help my migraine headaches.
But I had mine because they thought it might help my inflamed pancreas.
Isn't it a small world?
Yes. Did your operation help your migraine headache?
No, but three warts dropped off right afterwards. Your operation helped your inflamed pancreas?
No, but it cleared up my athlete's foot.
Say, do you know, that's very interesting, because I had a cousin who had digestive trouble, and they operated on him, you know. Oh, excuse me. Would you care for a vitamin?
Oh, how nice. My favorite brand. Go on with what you were saying.
Well, they had him on the operating table for 6 hours. What they didn't take out, they rearranged. And the doctor said...
Millie, they've been in there for an hour.
Yeah, I guess they're hitting it all fine.
I knew they would. I worry, Sir Ober.
Sure. There'll be no more squeezing a quart of carrot juice in the morning and no more boiling silverware before breakfast.
Oh, look. It's the lovebird.
What's been going on in there? It was awful quiet.
Oh, Glorioski, Miss Bronson.
Herman and I found we had a lot in common. I'm really very happy we met.
So am I.
And there's going to be a change in the routine around here.
Really, what did I tell you? Really, Aunt Ethel?
Yes. Mr. Harris is badly in need of dietary guidance, so he's going to take his meals with us. And from now on, we'll need 2 quarts of carrot juice in the morning, and they'll be boiled silverware for 2.
Ethel.
Millie!
Anyone for surgery?
Get next week at the same time when you have another date to Meet Millie, starring Audrey Totter. Directed by Bill Manhoff, produced by Frank Galen, and written by Bill Manhoff and Joel Kane. Bob Lamond speaking.
Meet Millie, on Tuned to Yesterday from March 23rd, 1952 on CBS, having a longer run than most critics might have thought, as it mirrored shows like Maisie and My Friend Irma. Star Audrey Totter left the radio show after her film studio refused permission for a television version of the program, though it did actually make it to air for a couple of years on CBS TV, ending in 1956. It's an hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and now one of the more popular ones. From radio's golden era, it's The Great Gildersleeve. Harold Perry stars in the final broadcast for their 1946 season on NBC from June 9th of that year.
The Kraft Foods Company presents The Great Gildersleeve. For the past couple of weeks, we have been recalling to you some of the great Gildersleeve's early experiences. Tonight, the great man wants to talk about one of the biggest days in his whole life. We give you now Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve.
Well, sir, as long as I live, I'll never forget last 4th of July. What a day. That was the day of the first annual outing of the Jolly Boys Social Club. Come one, come all, and bring your friends. I'd been up late the night before with the Committee on Arrangements, and I was planning to celebrate the anniversary of the independence of our country by sleeping a little late that morning. Huh. About 7 o'clock, outside my window...
Happy 4th of July, huh?
Yes, yes. There was a war on then. That was only a year ago, can you believe it? You couldn't buy fireworks anywhere in those days. But breathes there a boy with soul so dead he can't find some way to blow himself up on the 4th? I figured I'd better get down there and see what...
Leroy, whatever you're doing, stop it.
I'm not doing anything, huh?
Don't tell me that. I've got ears. Or I did have.
I'm just blowing up a tin can is all. Gosh, it's the 4th of July.
Well, hold your fire till I can get down there.
You can't deny a small boy the 4th of July. That's his day. But I still remember the time I made the mistake of carrying a 3-inch salute in my hip pocket. And my best friend sneaked up on me with a piece of punk. It was burned in my memory. I didn't want anything like that to happen to Leroy, so I got up and shaved and got dressed, put on my white Palm Beach suit and my white canvas shoes that I hadn't worn in years, and hurried downstairs. Breakfast was a rather disordered meal that day. I guess we were all a little excited. Marjorie kept jumping up and down and rushing off places. I finally told her to sit down. Marjorie, I said, for heaven's sake, light somewhere.
But I'm all through, Uncle Moore.
I don't care. Sit down. You make me nervous.
But I'm supposed to be helping Bertie make the lunch.
That can wait till after breakfast. One thing at a time here. Where's my cereal? Leroy, wipe your chin. Bertie, I'm ready for my cereal.
We ought to get a bell.
Here you are, Mr. Gildersleeve. Leroy, how about you?
Oh, I'm quite thankful.
What's this you've given me, Bertie?
That's your... Oh, my goodness. That's the chopped olives for the sandwiches.
Olives are my favorite fruit, Bertie, but not for breakfast.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Gildersleeve. That what comes from making lunch and breakfast at the same time. I only hope I didn't go and spread the oatmeal on the sandwiches.
Bertie's a scream this morning. How do you like her with that cap over her eye?
I really ought to go out there and help her.
Sit still, my dear. You'll only add to the confusion. She'll fight her way out of this.
What time are we leaving for the picnic grounds, Unky?
Well, Floyd should be coming by here for us about 11.
Floyd Munson? Are we going with him?
Yeah, he's going to get his cousin's hay wagon. We'll all ride out together. Everybody. Big excursion.
Oh, how wonderful. A hay ride. I've got to run right over and tell Marshall.
Yeah, Marshall will find out. You stay right where you are.
A hay ride? Oh, this is going to be more fun. Unky, I think you were a darling to arrange it.
Yeah.
And don't you look pretty in your nice white suit? Doesn't he look pretty, Leroy?
He looks like the good humor man.
I feel like the good humor man, Leroy. Yes, sir, nobody's going to make me mad today. But don't keep trying, Leroy. We had work to do that morning, but all of a sudden, nothing would do. We should drop everything and hang out the flag.
Well, what's the use of having a flag if you don't hang it out on the 4th of July?
All right. So you tramp upstairs to the attic. Two flights. Extra step. Well, you rummage around and you find the flag. Then you open the front attic window. It hasn't any sash cord, so you have to prop it up with a stick. Only you can't find a stick, so you use a coat hanger.
I'll go out in the yard, Uncle Morton, see how it looks.
Now, Leroy, when I get out the window, you hold on to my legs.
What for?
What for? What do you think? Just hold on to them, that's all. Now, don't let go.
Okay.
No, not yet, Leroy. We'd like it out there.
I thought you said to hold on to them.
Well, use your head, my boy. Now, you lower the flag out the window, and you squirm partway out yourself. And then you look down. Hold on, Leroy. Oh, sure. That's the time the telephone always rings.
Leroy, telephone.
For me?
Yes, for you.
I'll be back, Uncle.
Okay. Whoop, Leroy. You come back here. The little devil. There you are. Half in and half out. Straddling the windowsill on your stomach. In a Palm Beach suit that's just been cleaned and too tight. There's only one thing to do. You try to inch your way back in. There you are, teetering in space while your life hangs in the balance. And then it happens. Your elbow hits the hanger, the window drops like a guillotine. Oh, right in the back. You're pinned there like a rat in a trap, clutching at Old Glory. 4 or 5 hours pass. Maybe it's 4 or 5 minutes. You've been hollering as loud as you can, with the wind knocked out of you in your heart and your throat. And then some fool happens along and calls to you.
What you doing, Throckmorton? Shoot if you must this old gray head, but spare your country's flag, he said.
Leela, help! This is no joke, Leela. I'm stuck.
Oh, gracious.
Get help!
Stay right there, Throckmorton, you hear? I'll be up. Marjorie, Leroy, Bertie, everybody, help!
Safe at last. Safe again in the bosom of my little family. What might have been an ugly incident was turned into a happy triumph. For Old Glory waved proudly from our attic window. We all went out front to look at it. And we all agreed that it looked just fine there.
It looks just fine there, Throckmorton. Just fine.
It looks beautiful.
Yeah.
How do you like it, Bertie?
Mr. Gildersleeve, if I had my way, I'd leave it there all the time.
Yes, sir, it looked fine. But there were other things to do, and time was wasting, so I gave a few orders. Let's get going here, Bertie. No time to lose.
Yes, sir.
Now, Marjorie, you help Bertie with the lunch.
Okay.
Leela, I wonder if you could give him a hand.
Well, I have to dress yet, Throckmorton, but I'd be glad to do what I can.
Good. Leroy, you carry out the basket and things as they get them packed.
Me?
Yes, you.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to sit down on the porch here for a while and think about the Declaration of Independence. Well, I sat down on the swing there and lit a cigar. And I thought how different this was from other 4th of Julys I'd known. How quiet and how nice. And I thought how a man's tastes change as he grows older. Why, when I was a youngster, I lived in a world of high explosives. Dynamite caps, 5-inch salutes, red devils, Roman candles, erupting strombolis, 50-cent skyrockets. I loved them. Not anymore. Suddenly, I looked down the walk, and here came a little boy that might have been me at the age of 6. Only it wasn't. It was little Craig Bullard from across the street, and he was pulling a toy cannon. I knew what he was going to say before he said it.
Can Leroy play?
Well, hello, Craig. That's what you got there.
I want Leroy to play with me.
Well, Leroy's inside right now.
Time to come out.
Well, he has some work to do, Craig.
I want him to come out.
Later, perhaps later. Who gave you the cannon?
My father.
Oh, that's fine. Doesn't go off, does it? Now, Craig, surely your father's told you not to aim that thing at people. Craig, what are you going to do?
I'm going to shoot you.
Now, Craig, what's that string for?
I'm going to pull it.
Don't you shoot that thing.
I'm going to pull it. One.
Craig, do you hear me? Don't you shoot that.
Two.
Hey, look, Craig, I thought of a game.
Three.
I knew it wouldn't shoot.
Hi, Leroy.
Little guest to see you, Leroy.
Oh, for corn's sake. I'll see you later, Craig. I'm busy. I have a cannon.
What's that?
I have a cannon.
Hey, pretty neat.
Let's have a look at it, Craigie, old boy. Maybe I can show you how to shoot it.
You do, and I'll shine
it. Why, this is one of those carbide cannons. I pull the string and nothing happens. Well, no wonder. What you need is carbide. I've got some around in the garage. Come on. Hey, did you ever think of loading it with gravel?
Leroy?
Yeah?
No carbide, Leroy.
But it's meant for carbide.
And no gravel.
Okay, no gravel, just carbide.
And no carbide.
Okay. Come on, Craig. I know what we'll do.
What were they going to do? I sat there uneasily, wondering how little boys ever lived to reach the age of 12. But pretty soon, they were back again.
Leroy, knock over my cannon!
Wait a minute.
He is going to knock over my cannon!
Stop it! Stop it, Craig!
Yeah, stop it, you little snitcher!
Leroy!
General Eisenhower.
Leroy, Craig's a little boy. That's no reason to get angry with him if he wants to imagine things.
I'm General Eisenhower. He's Rommel.
Yeah.
Now he wants to change sides, the dirty guy.
He must have discovered how the game comes out.
You're going to take my cannon and go home.
Yeah, well, that's all right. I think that's a very wise decision, my boy. Very wise indeed. Rommel would have been smart if he'd done the same thing. Well, so it went. A few laughs, a few fights, a little excitement, and a lot of bustle and preparation. It was noon before we knew it, and the Jolly Boys were overdue. Leela had gone home to dress, and we were standing on the front porch waiting. Leroy and Marjorie and her boyfriend and I. And the wagon hove in sight.
Here it comes. Here it comes, Auntie.
Oh, boy, look at it.
Yes, sir. It was Floyd's cousin's hay wagon with a nice bed of fresh hay. And there were red, white, and blue bows on the tails of the horses. And somebody had twined red, white, and blue crepe paper through the spokes of the wheels. Floyd's cousin was handling the horses, and Floyd sat on the seat beside him. And believe it or not, he had an accordion.
Brother, is that corny? Oh, it's wonderful. Don't you love it, Marshal? Oh, Auntie, I'm so happy.
Yeah, don't jump up and down with the thermos bottles, my dear.
Oh, ahoy there, Commissioner.
Ahoy, Jolly Boys.
Climb aboard.
Oh, yes. Okay, let's get started, huh? There they all were. Good old Hooker, good old Peavy, good old Floyd, and good old Gates. I tell you to look at that good old wagon, all red, white, and blue, and all those fine fellows in it. Well, made you proud of your country, that's all. I'm glad there was a 4th of July.
Come on, come on. What are we waiting for?
Yeah, come on, Commissioner.
Scramble up there, Leroy.
Okay.
Up you go, Marjorie.
You're next, Gildy. Give him a hand there, somebody.
Don't strain yourself, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Hey!
Hold up, Marshal.
Hold
now. All together, fellas.
Now, up to Daisy.
Forget to stop for the girls.
Are you kidding?
Oh, take me out to the lawn. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me something at the Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get my letter.
Yes, sir, quite a day, the 4th of July. Everybody had a good time riding out to the picnic grounds. Leroy was up front with the driver. Marjorie and Marshall Bullard sat together, talking very seriously. Floyd was playing his accordion. Mostly requests from Eve Goodwin and Leela Ransom. Sounded pretty good. Floyd was all dressed up for a day in the country with white sports shoes. Judge Hooker had on a pair of golf knickers he dug up someplace.
I never knew the judge was bow-legged before.
That'll do, Leroy. Eve Goodwin was looking very pretty with a big straw hat on. Leela was wearing something she called a play suit.
Didn't you ever hear of a play suit, Throckmorton?
No, but I like it. What'll we play?
Oh, you.
Well, we got out to the grounds in about an hour. Nice woodsy spot besides a little stream. Quite a good deep pool at one point. We unloaded the baskets with the food. Everything was so peaceful for a few minutes.
Just pile all that stuff over here, boys, under the tree.
What about putting it out here in the open?
I prefer to have it under the tree, Floyd, since I'm to be the chef.
Who said you were going to be the chef, Judge?
Naturally, I assumed that...
Well, just turn off your assumer. You're assuming too fast.
Yeah, I'm pretty fair-handed at a barbecue myself.
I will attend to the barbecuing, Floyd.
Who said so?
What?
It just so happens, Gildy, that my recipe for barbecued frankfurters is acknowledged the best in town.
Not by me, it ain't. I got a sauce makes a hot dog taste like filet mignon.
Well, my sauce makes it taste like a hot dog.
I still say if you have any regard for our guests, you let me be the chef.
Oh, is that so? Now, wait a minute. Fellas,
is this any way to behave? Why, what'll our guests think of the Jolly Boys?
Gee, I never thought of that.
We've got an organization with a reputation to maintain. Summerfield has its eye on the Jolly Boys Club.
Chief Gates is right, fellas. I'll withdraw my claim to the chef's job.
So will I. You take it, Floyd.
No, Judge, you take it.
Oh, no.
Well, we'll let Gildersleeve have it.
Oh, no, not me.
Well, for heaven's sake...
You asked for it in the first place, Judge.
That has nothing to do with it.
The idea.
Let's be jolly boys, shall we?
So harmony finally prevailed. We made Hooker chef. Then somehow I got stuck with the job of collecting wood for a fire. So naturally, I went looking for Leroy. I finally found him down by the creek. Leroy, put your shoes on. I want you to gather some wood for a fire.
Now,
Leroy.
I'm working on an important project. I can't stop in the middle of it.
What is the project?
I'm improving the swimming hole. Everybody will be grateful when it's done.
There's nothing the matter with the swimming hole, my boy. It doesn't need any projects.
Are you kidding? It isn't deep enough. I can't even get over my head.
It isn't necessary to drown to have a good time, my boy. Now, put on your shoes.
Oh, please, Doc. I'll get the firewood later. Can't I just build a small dam?
Well, all right. But building a dam is harder than you think.
If a dumb animal can do it, I can do it. Gosh, a beaver. They chew down trees with their teeth and then slap the mud on with their tails.
How are you going to manage that?
Sit on it. Or maybe you could sit on it. That'd be better.
Leroy! You're going to play in the water. Put on your bathing suit. I finally got Marjorie and Marshall Bullard to go out and collect firewood. They'd been mooning around with nothing to do, and they seemed glad of an excuse to go off for a walk by themselves. Of course, when they came back an hour later, they'd forgotten to bring any firewood. They didn't seem to mind going back for some more, although by that time, the rest of us were getting ready to go swimming.
Say, Kamish, that schoolteacher don't look bad in a bathing suit, does she?
Miss Goodwin is a lady, Floyd.
Did I say she wasn't? Ransom ain't bad either.
Are you referring to Mrs. Ransom?
Well, sure. What's the matter?
You better watch your step there, Floyd. Remember, Mr. Gildersleeve's been engaged to practically every woman on this picnic.
Now, see here, you
fellas. Only kidding, Commissioner, weren't we, Floyd?
Well, I thought so. Come on, let's go swimming.
Well, gentlemen, off for a plunge in the brook?
Phoebe, come on, get into your bathing suit.
No, thanks, Mr. Gildersleeve, not today.
Oh, come on, Phoebe, it'll cool you off.
No, really, the fact is, I'm not much of a swimmer.
Oh, just float, then. Anybody can float.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. I've always had trouble floating.
There's nothing to it, Peeve. Just lie on your back and don't move.
And that's what they always told me.
Well?
Every time I try it, water goes up my nose.
Well, your head must be heavier than your feet.
That's what I say.
You two? Aren't you all going in the water?
We'll be right there, Leela. We're trying to get Peavy to come along.
What, Peavy? Not going swimming? No, Judge, not today. Well, good way to work up an appetite, Peavy. Well, I dare say, but the fact is, gentlemen, I promised Mrs. Peavy I wouldn't go. She has a theory it's bad to go in the water on a hot day.
That's a lot of baloney.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. Not to Mrs. Peavy, anyway. Of course, right now, she's out town.
Yeah, that's right. Come on, Peavy. Come on, fellas. Last one into the water is a rotten egg.
Fine, Peeve. The water's fine.
No, I think I'll just sit on the bank here and dabble my toes.
Come on up here with me, Peavy, and dive in.
You'll get wet faster your way, Peavy.
What'd you say, Floyd?
I didn't say anything.
Oh, do come in, Mr. Peavy. The water's lovely.
Is it cold?
It's just right. Stick your toe in.
Well, seems nice and moderate. Guess I can risk it. I'll just rub a little water on my chest and on my forehead and my stomach.
What's that for, Peeve?
That prevents a chill.
Look at me, darn it!
I wonder if I can remember how to do a duck dive. Would you ladies care to see me do my duck dive?
Oh, we certainly would, wouldn't we?
I can't think of anything more enjoyable.
Hey, here I come!
And now you watch. When I wiggle my feet just before they go under, that's the duck's tail feathers.
Good.
Oops, there go the tail feathers.
Look out, everybody. Here I come, and this time I mean it. A good time in the water, but the judge made us come and eat his barbecued frankfurters. His sauce wasn't so much. I only ate six.
You ate seven.
But I will say everybody was nice and helped clean up afterward. Even Leroy did a little work.
A little?
Leroy didn't have time to do much work because Mr. Bullard drove out and took him and Marshall and Marjorie home in his car. That just left the grown-ups to ride back in the hay wagon, and perhaps it was just as well.
Moonlight's nice tonight, isn't it, Throckmorton?
You bet.
The moon's awfully pretty tonight, isn't it, Judge?
Yes, it is, Leela. It is indeed.
Moon's awful pretty tonight, ain't it, Peavy?
Get away from me, Florent.
Are you comfortable, Eve?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Comfortable, Leela?
Yes, thank you. Although the hay gets a little itchy after a while.
Are you cold, Eve?
Oh, mercy, no.
Well, couldn't you pretend you're a little chilly?
Now, Throckmorton.
I can hear every word you say, Commissioner.
Well, play your accordion, Floyd, and give us a chance.
Okay.
Floyd played some nice old songs. And Eve snuggled up to me a little. But I couldn't seem to get my mind on her. Maybe it was because I couldn't help noticing the judge kept trying to slide his arm around Leela. Leela's nothing to me, of course. But just the same, when she called over to me...
Why don't you sing, Throckmorton?
Sing? Hi, George, that's a good idea, Leela. Why don't we all sing? Come on, Floyd, something we all know.
Well, let me see. How's that?
Oh, that's just the one, Floyd.
Okay.
All together now, folks.
In the good old summer time.
We hope that all of you can have at least a day this summer as fine as our last 4th of July. This is our last broadcast of the season. I guess all the members of our cast are looking forward to their vacations. I'd like to thank every one of them for the nice times we've had together all this year.
The Great Gildersleeve on Tuned to Yesterday from June 9th, 1946 on NBC. That closes this hour of sitcoms on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levenier. Thanks for tuning in.